Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Peyton Owens, 21 years of volunteer and career experience, currently captain with DeKalb County Fire on Engine and Truck 23, also known as Brockett Triangle. Peyton has a huge love for the job when it comes to being prepared for it. From physical fitness, running calls, firehouse life, and training, from the minute he got on DeKalb, he surrounded himself with those who emulated what he wanted out of this career and works on passing that same mindset to those who will take the torch once he's gone. With that, I present Mr. Peyton Owens.
Peyton Owens, DeKalb County Fire Rescue, 17 years, currently at Station 23 in Clarkston. We have a tiller truck, an engine, a two-person squad that is a first-out medical unit to keep call volume off of the engines. We also have our battalion chief is at our station for the 5th Battalion. DeKalb County Fire Rescue is a 26-station department. We're a little behind in stations. We should be at about 37 stations, but we are in the process of building 27 and 28. So we're trying to catch up. Metro, it's just east of Atlanta. It's has three major interstates that run through there. Interstate 85 coming into Atlanta, Interstate 20 coming into Atlanta, and 285 that goes around the Metro Atlanta area. We also have several highways that come in, bigger highways that are not interstates. Highway 78 is a big one that's in our territory. We have, Peachtree Industrial Boulevard, which is a big one. So a lot of traffic coming into DeKalb, about 750,000 residents. But Monday through Friday, it inflates to probably 2.5 million people coming through our area. So a lot of foot traffic coming through. I've been with DeKalb for 17 years. I started at Station 19, which is our hazmat station. It runs a Quint, a first out squad as well, two-person medical squad, and a hazmat truck that is staffed with four people. They handle all the hazmat for the county, and they are also a manpower crew for the north end of the station. So they respond to all working fires, north end, all second alarms, and every entrapment. I spent 12 years there, left, went to Station 23 as an FO, fire apparatus operator. At that time, the rank was then changed to a master firefighter, and got my tiller license, tillered there for a while, and went back to 19 because one of my mentors was getting promoted from driver to captain. So I went back over there to take his spot as a permanent DO. Ended up making captain, went to Station 13 in DeKalb, which is about the second busiest engine in the county. They respond to 120, 150 working fires a year. Super crazy busy engine. Spent 2 years there and learned so much. Just being first in on so many things. Had the opportunity to go back to 23 as an officer. I had that crew call me. They were losing an officer. They called me and asked if I would be interested in coming back over there to be their officer. And one, how humbling was that for me? That was absolutely amazing. But to go back to the station where I was a firefighter and tillerman was a dream come true for me. So I've been back there for 2 years, and that's where I'm at currently.
Okay. All right. How'd you get into the fire service?
You know, I ask people this question all the time, and it's so cool to hear all the different stories of people, how they got into the fire service. And it's really a long story, but I'll make it short. I wasn't brought up in the best of environments. My wife and I both are generational curse breakers, is what we call it. We actually have two businesses, and our main LLC is Legacy Shifters LLC. And we started that business and we run a few businesses under that, but we started that business and named it that because we're the first ones in our family to not be drug addicts, alcoholics, first ones to have high school diplomas, first ones to have a college education, first ones to ever have a 401k. And so we both decided, well, we had a child at a young age. I was 21. My wife was 19. She got pregnant, and you know, we knew we had to do something different. Bringing a child into the world at a young age, both of our parents did that. We knew we had to do something different. And I won't say that my life was bad, but I was going out on the weekends. We were going out and partying and concerts and things like that on the weekends. And right after she got pregnant, I saw a sign in a bathroom, and it said, you're a product of your circumstances. And that, man, that got my wheels turning. I was like, for years, I've blamed my circumstances for where I am in life. I'm not as far as I should be, or I'm not successful, or, hey, this is all I've ever known. And I was like, I've got to do something with my life. And my wife was already a CNA. So the high school we went to was a tech program. So she did nursing in her 4 years of high school as an elective. And she came out, she was a CNA. And so she was like, I want to go be an LPN. And so she went and got her LPN license. And then she later in life got her RN. And then later in life went and got her nurse practitioner. And that's where she is now. But when she was doing all that, I was like, what am I going to do with my life? You know, she's giving back. She's doing something cool. She's doing something to help people. What can I do? And 9/11 had just happened. And, you know, the world was just gushing over firefighters. And I was like, I want to be those guys. I want to be, you know, watching the footage of people digging through rubble is sad. I don't want my words to get twisted, but it's also inspirational, you know, to when something bad like that does happen that we couldn't prevent, to see those guys go out there and not leave and be there for days on end and working until their fingers literally bled with blisters and losing fingernails from grabbing rocks and picking them up is inspirational. And I, growing up the way I did, I wanted to do something so that at the end of my life, at the end of my career, I did something to help others, to give back in some kind of way. And at that time, I saw that and I was like, that's what I want to do. I know it sounds cliche, like the 9/11 thing, but that's what did it for me. Just seeing those heroes, seeing how those guys just never left. They did whatever it took to get their brothers out, and I wanted to be a part of that.
I mean, I can't object to anything you said. I mean, 9/11 was very it was tragic, but it was also very inspiring. Of course, you know, everybody knows the FDNY from 9/11. And I think that event put firefighters on the map for sure. I mean, it's not like we weren't never on the map, but to me, it like heightened that. And it made a lot of people either join the fire service or the armed forces. So I 100% agree with you on that. So after that occurred, was DeKalb always your choice? You know, some people always want to work for the big city or wherever, you know, wherever organization would hire them.
Yeah. So I started applying. At the time, I was doing heating and air with a company in Athens, Georgia, where I'm born and raised. So go Dawgs. And I was doing heating and air for a company called Stanfield Air Systems. And the owner is Miss Sally Stanfield at the time was absolutely amazing, because when I told her what I wanted to do with my life, it would not have been possible without her, because I started applying and everybody was like, you know, applications were coming in from anywhere. So you had to do something to raise yourself above the bar. And EMT school at the time was kind of that thing. Like, fire departments were starting to transition. They want people that had dual certifications. And really, paramedic school was the big thing. Like, if you were a paramedic, you could really get on just about anywhere in the metro Atlanta area if you had your MPQ-2 and your paramedic. But so I started EMT school first, started doing that, went to paramedic school straight out of EMT school while I was applying within that four-year gap before I got hired at DeKalb. But I started doing my research, and I only applied at four places. I applied at the city of Atlanta, DeKalb County, Augusta, right on the border of South Carolina and Georgia, and Athens-Clarke County, where I live. Athens-Clarke County was my first but also my last choice because they were not as busy. The pay was horrible. It was $18.5. I mean,
wow. Yeah.
You can live off $8,000 a year, right? But it was at home. It was right here. It was home. I knew all the streets. So transitioning to like being a driver one day, I knew every back street in Athens. I knew the traffic patterns. I knew all that. But really, Atlanta and DeKalb were my two top choices because of all of my research, seeing their call volume, seeing their types of call that they respond to, their cultures, it just fit me best. And Augusta was like that as well. They were pretty busy, fire volume wise. And but that's where I wanted to be. I wanted to be where the action was. I wanted to be at the place where 911 was utilized.
Okay. So, I mean, DeKalb for me, I've never been there, but I mean, it's the fire factory. Lots of jobs, no shortage of definitely fire duty. So what was your first, or when you did, I'm assuming you did rookie school, correct?
Yes.
All right. So once you got out of rookie school and they assigned you to your first station, was it everything you thought it would be being a career fireman?
So at that time, DeKalb was still it was still a combined department. So we still had DeKalb County Fire Rescue Ambulances at that time. We got rid of our last DeKalb Fire Rescue Ambulance rolled out of the station that I was at 19 in 2012, and Rural Metro came on. Then AMR bought Rural Metro out. And we do have an EMS division now, but it's ran a little different, just EMTs and paramedics. But to answer your question, I walked in at 6 a.m. I started, you know, I walked in and grabbed a broom. I started cleaning. At 6 o'clock, I put my stuff down in the bay. And like at 6:10, the bell rang for a cardiac arrest. And the officer walked in. And he said, "That's you." And so I put my stuff on the ambulance, and the paramedic that I was with is a great friend of mine. I love him to death, but he talks like this, using his mouth, but you know, and he talks at a whisper. So this is my first day. It's 40 minutes or 50 minutes before my shift starts. Call comes out for a cardiac arrest. It's a territory over in from where we were. And it was on the edge of city of Atlanta and DeKalb, and it's a nursing home. So we're going, I have no idea where we're going. We don't have cool iPhones back then. All we have are these big map books in the truck and this Garmin, but the Garmin was so slow that, you know, as you're coming up to your road, it still shows you like two blocks back, and it's like, turn left now, and you've already missed your road. Those things were not up to speed back then. And this guy's trying to tell me where to go. He's whispering. I can't hear him. I'm trying to drive this ambulance and look at this map book. And yeah, we finally get there, and the patient was as stiff as a board and probably had been deceased for hours. And I was like, this is craziness. Like, what is going on here? Is this what I'm getting into? So yeah, it was everything I expected it to be. It's organized chaos, and I knew it was going to be organized chaos. And it was exactly what I expected it to be. And we got back, and I introduced myself, and by like 7:15, the officer had me catching a hydrant, seeing how fast I could wrap a hydrant, catch it, get water to the truck, throwing ladders on the side of the station, pulling lines. So by 9 o'clock, we had went through all that, and it was everything I wanted it to be. I had a few good senior guys there who told me everything I did was wrong, even though it was right. And it was great. I love being hazed. Like I love kind of that tough love, getting on me. You don't have to tell me you're doing a good job every 5 minutes. I don't need to hear that. I don't ever need to hear I'm good, doing a good job. Just tell me when I mess up. Tell me I messed up. That's it.
Right. Right.
If you don't tell me anything, I know I'm not messing up. So we're good. Okay. Yeah, it was great. It was a great first day, first shift. So I think I got my first working fire on my third shift, and it was a big old huge apartment fire.
Okay. Well, with that being said, this question that I like to ask you, because it's also directed at anybody coming into the fire service. Did you find that you wanted to be around the go-getters, the hard chargers, the heavy hitters? That way you could absorb, the information and the skills that they were bringing to the table?
Absolutely. 1,000%. I didn't want to be at the station that was slow. I didn't want to be, around people with bad reputations. And anybody that's in the fire service, look, I'm a truthful guy. There's no gray area with me. It's black and white. I'm an open book. I'm easy to read. I put the information out there. And in the fire service, you have your go-getters and you have your paycheck collectors. And the paycheck collectors like to think that they can trick people into thinking that they're a go-getter. You can't. Like, we know that you're a paycheck collector. We know that you're not a go-getter. Like, your actions at the station and on scene, we see all that. You may not be called out, but we see it. We know. And I did not want to be around people like that. I had great mentors from the beginning. I had family in the fire service. I have an uncle that retired from Gwinnett County Fire. I have an uncle that retired from Athens Clark County Fire. I have a great uncle that was with the Cab County Fire Rescue, that was one of the very few line of duty deaths that we have had in DeKalb County back in the early 70s. So, I had an idea of what I wanted, but I wanted to be, I wanted my reputation to be good. I wanted, I just wanted to be around good people. And I got that. I have never had a crappy crew. I have only been around great people, great mentors. My three stations that I've been at, 19, 13, 23, all attract those types of people because they are busy. They are the manpower crew. They are that truck company. They are the second busiest engine in the county. So they don't really attract the people that want to just kind of come in and float by.
Right.
Yeah, definitely wanted to be around those. I was taught very early on that your reputation means everything. And if your reputation is tarnished early in your career as a lazy person, that's what you're going to be known as 20 years later. Your first year, you can be lazy, and then your next 29 years, work hard, and people are going to remember that first year where you were lazy.
Well, well said, for sure. Reputation speaks volumes, for sure. Okay. The term aggressive, what does that mean to you, especially with you being a company officer now? What does the term aggressive mean for you?
I love this question. Aggression. So I teach a class. I'm one of six instructors that were chosen in our department to teach a class on May 4th, 2023. We had three firefighters get caught in a flashover. Two of them were hurt pretty bad burn, but a third one was pretty severely burned. He had a long recovery of about 10 months back in the field. Now he's working. Everybody lived, but we created a class on it. We had three different helmet cams that they everybody turned over, and we have audio, and we got with our DeKalb County DC TV that does all like local television, and we made this awesome, awesome class. It's about 4 or 5 hours long, where we go through the entire call, almost like a NIOSH report. But we have these helmet cams, and we have our CAD system, the times, the dispatch audio, and it's all compiled together on a timeline where you can watch the helmet cams, you can watch the CAD calls, and see everything put together. And doing the class, a lot of when we it's made to provoke conversation of why did they go in the front door? So a quick little background on it. It's a split level house on the left side, garage all the way on the Delta side. So Alpha side, you see two stories on your left, one story on your right. You got your two story Bravo Charlie, and then your Delta side was a garage. Fire started in the garage, flames through the roof when they got there, 40 feet in the air. They chose to go through the front door to wrap around and stop fire attack that way. And one of the main questions is, why didn't they just start hitting the garage fire? I don't know. They didn't. Let's learn from it. They went in, ended up flashing on them. And one thing people talk about is why were they so aggressive? We're too aggressive. It's aggressive to me. And so I really thought about that. Aggression is more than kicking in a front door and dragging a hose down in and squirting water on a fire. And I feel like most firefighters think that that's what the term aggression means, or that's how they define it. I'm an aggressive firefighter. Okay, what do you mean by that? I ain't scared to kick a door in and go down a hallway. Okay, that's cool. But to me, there's so much more to aggression, and especially if you're riding seat. If you're an officer or you're stepping up riding seat, you can be aggressive and still be defensive. Aggression to me is knowledge, experience, studying, reading smoke, doing your 360, knowing your building construction, understanding tactics, understanding the abilities of your crews that's on scene. Because you may have a fire on this side of your territory that gets these other crews coming in versus this side, these crews aren't as strong as the ones down here if you go to a fire on this side of your territory. So knowledge and physical aggression to me is what aggression means. So if I pull up and there's super heavy smoke showing, it's boiling out of the front door, it's black chugging, it looks like something out of a Western movie, right, where they're trying to rob a coal train, and you see that smoke stacking, that black smoke's just puffing out. To be aggressive, yeah, you can just go in with a hose line, but you also have to be smart. Read that smoke. Is it getting ready to light off? And you saying, hey, we're not going in there until you flow water for 30 seconds through this doorway to cool that environment down, to bust up that thermal layer so that it doesn't flash on you. That's aggressive. Because if you just don't read that smoke and have that knowledge and do those tactics to before you go in, then you're just dumb. Like, just, you're just letting people go into a smoke field. It's fire, right? Mm-hmm. Super black smoke is fire. It's going to light off. That's just being dumb. That's not aggressive. Aggressive is knowledge. Aggressive is knowing what you're doing, making good sound tactics based on your knowledge and experience. Very long-winded answer. Sorry.
No. It's well explained. That's why I didn't want to interrupt you, because you definitely have a point on there. Like, you know, we need to know. It's cool. It's okay, in my opinion, to be aggressive. But yes, like you said, you got to have that knowledge to back it up. 100%.
Yep. There's some great videos, and I love the internet. I love the TikToks and the Instagrams and the Facebook fire posts. I follow lots of Lots of pages and good friends with the people on the back end of it. We chit chat and talk, but you see some of these things, like there's one that's it's a like one story burning and the front door is just burning slap up and fire coming all the way around it. The roof on the porch is on fire. And the firefighter comes up and he starts trying to force the door. And he's just got direct flame impingement on him. His helmet ends up catching on fire, like on the top, and his gear just starts off gassing. And he finally, gets the door open and comes back down off the porch. And like somebody comes up and they're patting the helmet out. I'm all for aggression. We're going to go in and put that thing out all day long. But that's dumb. That is dumb to go on the porch with direct flame impingement like that. One, there's nobody alive right on the other side of that door when fire's coming out 360 degrees of it. Do we have to get in there and put it out? Yeah. Aggressive to me would have been you're first on scene, do a 360. Where is something not burning that you can VES and look for life? Have a hose, have a water can. A water can, a 2.5 gallon water can as you walk up, if you're going to force that door, knock some of that direct flame impingement back and then force the door. Because here's what people don't think about. Gear gets saturated, right? We start talking about our TPP for our gear, our THL, our thermal release, and how much heat our gear can take. You're walking up on that porch. You're trying to force that door. Your gear gets saturated with heat, and then a hose line comes up. You can't make a push. Your gear, if it's starting to off gas, your gear is so heat saturated that you can't make a good push without getting burned. Why not knock that stuff back with a water can, go up, force the door, and then your gear is not heat saturated, and you can take that line and go deeper. You can go further inside that house. You can make a more aggressive attack because you were smart and didn't let your gear get heat saturated where it's off gassing before you even made entry into that IDLH environment.
You're speaking
So.
facts. So yes, I don't see a rebuttal to that at all. It's one of those things, that aggressiveness or the cowboy mentality or whatever you want to call it. Like there are things that we should do, and then there are things that we shouldn't do. Because I've seen that video you're talking about, and I'm like looking at this video like, for real? This guy for real?
I love that guy. Like his aggression, I'd put that guy on my crew any day. Come on, let's go. But you have to just kind of think about things. And I actually had my rookie firefighter do the exact same thing. He was I sent him off, and he was on a different crew, and he had only been in the field right at a year, and he was trying to force the door, direct flame impingement. Something was right on the other side of it. The crew he was riding with, the guy riding seat was trying to help another rookie firefighter get their gear on right. And my guy was like, I got to do something. Let me at least get this door open. Direct flame impingement ended up putting him out of work for 6 months
Ooh.
because it burned his, that direct flame impingement burned his ears, neck, and his hands pretty bad to where he had to have skin grafts at Grady. And, it's one of those things. We watched that video together, and I told him, he's like, I just Cap, I had to do something. I just wanted to be aggressive. I was like, there was a different way to go about it.
For
So,
sure.
we gotta be smart. Aggression, I love that word. I love that question, but people have to start realizing that aggression is knowledge.
Okay. This next topic, it definitely goes hand in hand with you. Leadership, whether a chief officer or company officer perspectives, and I'm pretty sure the same pages that you follow, I follow. And there's been a lot of topics going around, a lot of departments. Some departments are getting more heat in targeted areas than others. So, with that being said, when did you know you wanted to be a company officer? And when you were able to get the position, What did you tell yourself going forward? Like, hey, this is what I want to be like. This is what I don't want to be like.
Well, having my whole career, I've always watched people and people I looked up to, and we use the word mentor, right? A lot of people are like, I've got a mentor. I've got 60 mentors. You know, I don't just have one. And a lot of times they don't even know they're my mentor. I've never even told them. I just ask them questions, and I choose mentors for different areas. So a guy that's super knowledgeable on truck work, just ladders, he's my ladder mentor, an engine mentor, a communication mentor. One of our chiefs just retired a week or so ago, and he has been my communication mentor for years. He knows how to speak to people. I'll call him and be like, hey, I'm thinking about asking this question to someone. What do you think about it? He's like, maybe you could think about it this way. And so I've always tried to pick the things, people that I like how they do things, and incorporate it to my leadership. And then people that I'm like, I would never do that. I try to put that in my book of things I would never do and form myself as an officer leader that way. Of when I hear people say, I can't believe he would do that, try to keep that in the back of my mind, say, hey, I heard 10, 15 people say they don't like how this leader does this. Let me not do that, or let me modify it. Man, such and such is such a great captain. I'd go through the gates of hell with him. What does he do right? Let me look at those things. And I've tried to incorporate that. I never, ever in a million years thought that I would be a leader. I've never, I've always been one of those guys that just go unnoticed. You know, my whole high school career, younger, I just fly under the radar. Like, oh yeah, I know that guy, but I don't know that guy. And so I've just kind of did that my whole life, just flew under the radar, stayed out of the line of sight. And, you know, that way you don't get bothered. You don't get picked on. You don't get bullied. You don't get chosen. Cool. But then when I became a DO and I had three guys under me that needed to get their pump license all about the same time, we started working on that with all three of them. And that led into doing classroom stuff and teaching them stuff, truck stuff. And we were just working every shift on things. And they were just picking it up, and sent all three of them at the same time to pump school. They all got their pump license at the same time, became relief drivers in our department. And that just kind of fueled me. And I really enjoy teaching. I really enjoy sharing this knowledge. I didn't even know I had this knowledge in my head until they asked me the question and I just spewed it out. And that really lit a fire under me to want to teach other guys to have passion. My leadership style is, I don't want to just lead you to be good. I want to instill in other people that they want to move on and teach and invest in other people. So that's kind of my leadership style is, I want you teaching classes. I want you taking on roles of projects, things like that. And you know, leadership is, we try to encompass, like we try to put the word leadership into this one little small box, but it's not. It is huge, wide array of different things. There's so many different forms of leadership. There's different styles of leadership. It just, we can't put it in a small box like I think a lot of people do and say, well, this is what it means to be a leader. Yeah, it does in this one small area. But you take that, what you said it means to be a leader, and move it over to this different profession, and it doesn't work there. Like, you can't be a high class leader in a Fortune 500 company and come to the fire department and lead people. They're not going to follow you. It's different. And so, you know, a few like small rules I have is you have to do what you say you're going to do. You can't say you're going to do something and not do it because people lose trust in you. So if you say you're going to be somewhere. If you say you're going to do something, do it. If you say you're going to help somebody, don't back out on them. So that's a big thing. Teaching, like I signed my guys up to teach a class this year at the Fire Academy. It's a safety and survival class that we teach, and everybody was like, oh my God, it's every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday that we work, and it's 7 hours, and it's hot, and it's sweaty, and it's just nonstop. So every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday that we work, guess where we're going to be? At the Fire Academy. What if we miss a fire? What if the, oh, and what am I, when am I going to do my target solutions? Everybody's kind of like, oh. But after like second class, people, my guys love it. They absolutely, to just see them light up when people come down there and them start spewing that knowledge out and them teaching them, they absolutely love it. And that's kind of my leadership style. Like you said, that there's a lot of heat and stuff going on about leadership right now. We could go down a huge rabbit hole of the Kool-Aid. And, once you go from that blue collar to that white collar leadership, I'm not a fan of the safety culture. It is always, always them over us. Always. I signed up for to put my safety on the back burner and put the safety of the citizens first. Yeah. I can say that tongue twister. So it is, it's all about them. Always, always, always citizens first. And our safety comes second. That doesn't mean that we intentionally just throw tons of firefighters at a fire and get them hurt and killed. There's risks, reward, all that good stuff. But safety culture saying, nah, we're not even going to think about going at that. Are you like, it's only 50%. There's another 50% of the building that we can go search. What if somebody's in there? So, aggressive leadership style, aggressive, loving, caring. You got to love and care for your guys. You have to talk to them. You have to know what their career path looks like because you got to help them. You got to help them with their career path. Maybe they want to go to inspections. Maybe they want to go into the training academy. Maybe, they just want to stay a driver. You need to know their goals and aspirations as well so that you can help them fulfill that. That's part of leadership as well to me.
Right. Okay. And with you being a company officer, the crew that you have, the crew that you're in command of, do you find yourself holding the reins back with them or do you have to kind of give them a little push?
So I always want the guys that you have to pull the reins back on and not have to push. I've always been around people like that. Now I've had a few come through where you kind of have to push newer guys, younger guys, rookies. They need a little push because they don't know any better. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so my guys definitely got to.
During our conversation, we had a technical glitch in communication. Technology, right?
I can still hear you.
We were talking about, holding the reins back, pushing rookies.
Yeah, so I don't really have to hold the reins back on my guys, but I also don't have to push them either. So, when I say my job is easy, it is so easy. My senior guys take care of everything. I have, we have three drivers, but we have the front end, back end of the tiller, and then an engine driver for DOs. In between those spots, we have a master firefighter that's a relief driver, but hasn't taken the DO spot. So they can still ride seat and be still and things like that. Our DOs, that's all they do is they're assigned to drive their station. And then we have senior firefighters underneath that are trying to come to those spots. But My like we got a rookie a month ago, and that first shift, they my guys, I think it was like 9 o'clock at night. Usually by like 8, 8:30, they're all like, hey, let's go make beds. Bells ringing for to make beds, and it hadn't happened yet. So I got up and walked out in the bay, and they had the rookie out here quick dressing, because he couldn't do it under 2 minutes, and they sat out there at 11 o'clock working with him until he finally got it under 2 minutes. And they do that every shift with them. They make them hydrate every shift. They do rope stuff every shift, like after dinner. Senior guys, it really likes work a little more. Well, out there, I walk out in the folks basket hanging from the ceiling, and he's working the pickoffs or something like that. One guy getting ready for to be a relief driver and go to pump school. We're out with him every day, pulling lines, talking friction laws, walk into the our meeting room. There's a huge whiteboard, and there's 20 questions, pump questions up there that he has to answer. So they take care of everything. I don't have to go to my guys and say, hey, did you do some target solutions today? My senior guy's already on it. Hey, don't make cap have to come to you and say, do your target solutions. So they make my job super easy, which makes time free up for me to just invest in them, find things for them to be able to do, to sit back and talk to them, learn them more, learn their goals, their aspirations, connect with people that can help them, get into classes that they want, or, you know, find out information of to help them move on with what it is that they want to do. We had one guy just want to do smoke divers. So for the past 2 months, him and I have just been texting every day. Hey, did you work out today? Did you run today? How's your nutrition? Just it frees me up to do things like that.
Okay.
So yeah, I always want the guys that I have to hold back, not push forward. Now, if you have a guy that you've been trying to push forward and just can't, send him to me. I'm pretty sure we could either get that person in line, or they're not going to work for the fire department anymore when we're done. They're going to decide this isn't for me.
With that being said, with what you just said, have you found those busy stations in the cab that get those individuals? You know, most of the time, the busy stations have the crews that are dialed in, go-getters, hard chargers, go to bed late, whatever the case may be. Have you had to deal with having a person that you have to push, and after pushing for so long, you're like, hey, pal, this just ain't you?
Absolutely. So, had one when I made company officer. I inherited an individual that was like that, and we tried. Like, we pushed, we trained, and he just was not getting it. And I finally, after about a year and a half, sat him down and said, "This job just may not be for you." I mean, I did a 30, 60, and 90-day performance plan with them. We filled that out. We went through it completely. We did the performance plan, set goals for them, and training. And he would do it, but you know, it was just like bare minimum to get it done and get it checked off. And every day was like his first day in the station. Every third day was like his. He was brand new, and like he forgot everything we taught him. And finally, I just sat him down and said, "Look, we've done a 30-day plan, we've done a 60-day plan, we've done a 90-day plan. We've been through them. You're just not getting it. I don't know if you just don't want to get it or what, but maybe this job just is not for you." And I think it was like 2 weeks later, he put his resignation in and went to work for Delta full time, and is doing great, making good money. He's happy. But sometimes you just have to be truthful with people. And I know there's some people, there's different mindsets. One of my mentors thinks that we can train and change anybody. Doesn't matter who it is. I am not of that mindset. There's some people that this job just isn't for. You can love basketball, football, baseball, all you want. I love college football. Love it. I'm never going to play for the University of Georgia. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen, right? And you could love basketball. You can know every stat. You can know every player. You can know, you know, every game plan. But if you're 6 foot tall, you're not going to play in the NBA. It's not going to happen. Like, it's just not. And people understand that. But then when you tell people, yeah, you can't, this job's not for you as a firefighter, people tend to get offended. Like, what do you mean?
Right.
Anybody can do anything. No, that's not true. That's not true. Some people just don't have the mental capacity for this. Some people don't have the physical capacity for this. Some people don't have either one.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have that drive and initiative to want to obtain that physical and mental and educational piece that we need to do this job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Preaching. With that being said, you mentioned the keywords physical fitness. I know watching you and your posts and things of that nature, I know physical fitness is a top priority for you. And if I am 100% right, were you not too long ago, just a couple of days ago, did you do the mountain climb with Back of the Bay?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, I did go out with those guys.
So with that being said, how important do you think, in your opinion, is physical fitness for the fire service?
So it is 100% top priority. It's like having two kids. You don't love one kid more than the other, but both kids are kind of different and you like each child. Like, I have a son and a daughter, love them equally, but I like more things about my son than I do my daughter and vice versa. Physical fitness and education in the fire department are like that. Like, you have to be smart. And a lot of physical go-getter, just, you know, knuckle-dragging, tough firefighters don't really care about the educational piece. You know, like, oh, why are you going to get your fire science degree? You can't learn anything about firefighting from a book. Yeah, actually, you can. You can learn a lot about the educational piece. That is super, super important. But physical fitness is too. Like, you have to be smart and you have to be in shape. A Navy SEAL, we're nowhere close to being Navy SEALs in the fire department. But the analogy I like to use is that Navy SEALs, you can be the toughest MF-er out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go through that Navy SEAL training all day long. Like, you can go and make it through Hell Week. Everybody thinks about Hell Week when you think about Navy SEALs, right? If you listen to people like Jocko and some of these other guys that are Navy SEALs, Hell Week was the easy part. Like, they talk about it like, yeah, physically it was hard, mentally it was hard, but the rest of it, when you have to take tests when you're tired and they want that mental aptitude, and you have to be intelligent as well, that's where most people fell out. Like, yeah, Hell Week gets you out of the physical side, but then there's still like 12 weeks after that.
Right.
And so you have to be in shape, you know, to get through Hell Week, right? But then you have to be smart to get through it all to be that SEAL. Like, those guys aren't dumb. These are guys that made like 4.0s in college. Yeah, they're tough as nails, and, you know, they can run a marathon in an hour, and they can – you know, swim a mile, and they can do all this stuff, but they're smart too. And so physical fitness for me is top priority, because if you cannot put your gear on, an air pack on, throw a ladder, climb in a window, take it out, crawl in, search a room without sucking down a bottle, or being so tired that you can't physically search the room correctly, you're useless. If you're so tired and beat down that you can't go in and pull a citizen out, or if one of your brothers go down, you can't pull them out, help them out, you're useless. Why are you even here? Like, it makes no sense to me to want to be a firefighter and go into an environment that could kill you, and you physically can barely even, you know, carry yourself in there. Like your heart rate's 200 just going through the front door and getting 10 feet inside, pulling a hose, and you're almost just done. There's some great studies out there that people have done. I just presented a wellness fitness initiative for our department last Tuesday. And, you know, there's a study where they took 37 untrained firefighters. And by untrained, they mean they just didn't have a workout plan at all. They took 12 firefighters that were on a fitness regimen. They worked out. They had them all do a PAT. And then they had the 12 trained firefighters do the PAT and then do it again a second time where they were fatigued. The second time that the 12 trained firefighters did it were still 70% faster than the 37 untrained firefighters that did it unfatigued, just one time. So the second time that the 12 did it that were on a fitness regimen still beat the times of the untrained firefighters by 70%. That's huge. Like, does someone's mother, brother, sister, father, son deserve that from you? Absolutely. You signed up for, like, the fire department didn't come knock on your door and say, "You're awesome. We right. want you. Right. Like, we'll do whatever it takes to get you." No, you came and applied for the fire department. You told this county that I want to be here, that if a problem happens, I'm going to be there. And so if you pull up and you can't effectively search, or if you can't effectively pull a line physically and put the fire out to save people's stuff, go somewhere else. Like, leave, because there's people out there that do want to. And if you're fat and out of shape and you breathe hard walking up two flights of stairs and you work for a fire department, you need to look in the mirror and reevaluate things. Because one, you're putting your brothers at risk. If you put your gear on and go into a fire and you have a cardiac event, we have to drag you out. You're putting the citizens at risk. You can't effectively get in there quickly enough to pull them out. You took an oath to do that. You have to be physically ready. How am I going to go and call or go to your house and knock on the door and say, "Hey, Mary, I'm sorry, Tom's dead. He had a heart attack inside of a fire. We trained earlier today, and, you know, we got back, and it was like an hour afterwards from training all day, and he was already tired, and then we got a call and a fire, and we had to go inside, and it's just too much, and he just had this physical exertion and had a heart attack." Like, I shouldn't have to do that. I shouldn't have to worry about that. This is a physical job. This job takes physical and mental tolls on us, and we have to be ready for that. And if you're not, if you sit around and eat Doritos all day and all you drink is Mountain Dew and Dr. Pepper, and, you know, you're fat and out of shape, I'm sorry, but you're wrong. You're doing a disservice to the citizens, and you're doing a disservice to your brothers. You're doing a disservice to your family and yourself. And I know that there's a firefighter that's going to listen to this that is fat and out of shape, and they're going to say, "I could put my gear on right now and work circles around you." 1265 Rocket Road, Clarkson, Georgia, 30021. Come prove it to me, because I'm telling you, you're wrong. 100% you're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. You cannot work circles around me. It's not going to happen. You can't keep up with me. It's not going to happen. I've seen it. We teach a safety and survival class where we do a bailout, and then we do a dry run through a burn building of searching, and then we do an entanglement drill, and then we go to our sixth floor of our burn building where they do an apartment search. And I've seen 70 to 75% of our department on my shift struggle to get through that apartment search on the sixth floor. They have to hook up the air as they come in. They go up to the sixth floor. We have a hose line. It's four rooms. They have to do a search. They get through a first room. We do a scenario that they're trapped and then they have to find their way out. They have to breach walls and go through walls, find a hose line, and get their way out. Only about 30% of our people are actually making it all the way through that room. There's no heat. You're blacked out on your mask. There's no heat. It's low stress, and you're still vibing on 4,500 PSI. You know, that's, we got to be better than that.
You're right.
100% we have to be better than that. And I know I've heard it. Oh, I can do that. I can do that. No, you can't. You can't. You can't. There's a study out there. They asked 1,000 men, if you got in a fight with a bear, do you think you could win? Well, what's the first question you think they ask? Well, what kind of bear? Doesn't matter. It can be a 100-pound bear or a 700-pound bear. It's a bear with teeth and claws. It's abnormally strong. 90%, so like 900 of these 1,000 men think that they could beat the bear and survive. Like that's what testosterone does for us, right? As males, we're overconfident. And that same mentality happens in the fire service of, no, I don't work out like you. You don't have to be a bodybuilder.
Right.
You don't have to be a power. You don't have to be a fitness model. You like me, you know, you can tell I work out, but you also can tell I like Five Guys. You know, I'm not going to turn down a cheeseburger, but 30 minutes a day. And that, you know, I put a workout up every 3 day for our three shifts. None of them are over 30 minutes. I just need you moving 30 minutes a day so that you can effectively go into a fire and do what we need to do to help a citizen. And it's more like, of course, saving life is our number one priority, but you need to be physically fit to protect property as well. Because if you can put a fire out and save one room in a person's house, there may be something in there that means everything to them. You know, I've had, after a fire, we saved like one room, and there was a flag in a closet in the room. That was the only room we saved. But there was a flag in there from World War II of the family's grandfather that meant everything to them. There was another time we saved one little chest, and there was a Bible that had been passed down for like seven generations in that family. And it meant the world to them that Bible was saved. So that's what it means to me. Like, physical fitness, top priority. And why would you not want to be healthy? I don't understand it.
Dude, it's puzzling.
I don't get it.
It's puzzling. I'm with you. Like, we have organizations that, when you talk about, hey, we need to have a physical fitness plan or whatever, it's like, ooh, wait a minute. It's like we're going into uncharted territory. Or you can't say this about this individual. You can't say that. And it's like, we know what this job does to our heart rate, how much we sweat, especially in the summer months. Like, it's a given. This job is physically demanding. Yet we can't say something to an individual like, hey, you are overweight, or you need to improve on this because your yearly PAT test, you're struggling. It's like, we can't say that. We just want bodies on trucks. And to me, doing that, ignoring the fact that we know that there's an issue, and just putting bodies in the seats, we're putting everybody at risk. And it's just, it's crazy.
It is. You know, we talk every year, we talk about line of duty deaths, and that it doesn't change. It, you know, the numbers stay like this. It's usually between 110 and 130, somewhere in that range of line of duty deaths. And now cancer is going to start making that tick upwards now that we're recognizing cancer as a line of duty death through like the IFF. But cardiac is still number one, right? Cardiac events are still number one of line of duty deaths. And we're going to see that number increase if we keep low standards, because if we're just putting bodies in seats and the standards are low, the physical standards are low, we're going to see that number increase, because these people are going to have heart attacks. They're going to have strokes on scene. because putting this gear on, not releasing body heat, getting hot, sweating physically, not hydrating correctly is going to make your cardiac, like whether you're into EMS or not, if you, all you drink is sweet tea and Mountain Dew and Coke and no water, your heart's not going to beat properly once your body is under stress, and you're going to have a cardiac event. It's going to happen. Like, it's just going to happen. That your heart can't handle it. So you have to train your heart to be ready for those high stress situations. Why would you want to work in a career like this for 25, 30 years and then die 4 years after you retire because you sat around in the recliner? It just makes no sense to me. Like, don't work to work to live and enjoy your retirement, your pension, your pay. Like,
right. No,
there's so many facets to being healthy, citizens, enjoying your life, your family, your brothers, all of it. So,
Yeah, I
could ramble on about that one all day long.
No, it's fine. It's one of those things, and I don't know if it's because we are. It's like, you know, you'll watch the news and they'll talk about what is obese, what's not. It's like we're kind of just accepting it, like it's the new normal, but it's not the new normal when it comes to this job. You know what I mean? Because Major League Baseball, National Football League, National Basketball Association, NHL. Have no issues telling their players, like, nah, you're not making the cut.
Yeah.
Why can't we do that for the fire service as well?
Yeah, you know, it's 2024 and things are different. I'm 43. Things are different now with, like, inclusivity.
Right.
And I get it. Look, I'm not the whole political – I'm not going to go down that road, but the – we see a lot of advertisements for clothing, for
food.
Dance, food, like, and with social media and TikTok, there's so many influencers out there that are big is beautiful. Just because I'm big doesn't mean, yeah, maybe you're beautiful on the inside, but look, worldwide, being fat's not attractive. It isn't. And for you to glorify it is not a good thing, because you're telling people it's okay to be unhealthy. And there's no way around it. You know, if you're overweight and obese, you're unhealthy inside. Like, your organs have fat on them. Your liver has fat on it. You know, it's unhealthy.
All right.
So, I think that has a lot to do with it, is that we're saying that the inclusivity apart, like, hey, yeah, big guys can, or big people can come do this job too. I mean, yeah, you can. Can you do it effectively? No, you
right.
can't. I'm sorry, you just can't.
Right. No. Like I said, I'm tracking you. I, everybody has their place. You know, I know some big country, strong looking dudes that have their place in the fire service, but they can do their job.
Yeah.
But I see, I 100% know where you're coming from. So yeah, definitely don't get that misconstrued. Yeah. We every organization has an individual or individuals that they go, you could use a little help here. But nobody wants to say anything. Nobody wants to be the bad guy until, God forbid, something happens. Then it's like, man, what could we have done to prevent this? Maybe tell these individuals, hey, you're not cutting it. We got to change some things.
Yeah, and, you know, there's two people in my department. One of them's on my shift, the next station over. And he's a larger fella, but nothing jiggles on him. Like, he's a larger fella, but nothing jiggles. It's
mm-hmm.
all hard.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to crunch. He works out some, but he pressure washes on the side. So he's just physical all day, sweating, moving. This guy put his gear on and he'll go to work. He'll do things. There's another fella. He's probably 300 pounds. Nothing jiggles on this guy. All he does is sandbag workouts, and he moves a 400-pound sandbag like it's nothing. Like, just
Damn.
picks it up, throws it over his shoulder. I mean, his calves are like as big around as my chest. But nothing jiggles. And he came and did our sixth floor apartment thing I was talking about earlier, and he smoked it. Like, he killed it. I'm not saying just because you're big that you suck. You can, like, these guys work out. But like I said, there's a difference in like that loose jiggle fat and like guys, like you said, that cornbread, country fed, collard greens and cornbread, been working their whole life.
Right.
Bigger guys.
Right. 100%. Yeah, 100%. My last question I always like to ask the guests, where do you see yourself, or where would you like to see yourself end up in the fire service? You're a company officer now. Before you retire out, would you like to see yourself in the training division, battalion chief?
We just had a battalion chief process. I did put in for it. I'm not quite ready to go that route yet, but I did put in for it because for a few reasons. One, if I did get it, I would give 100%, and I'd have a little broader area of influence. Two, those types of people that we talked about earlier, they're going to put in for battalion chief. I mean, I can't complain about them getting the position if I don't put in myself. So, you know, I put in for that reason as well. Two, I care about my organization. So I know, even though sometimes when you're not ready to move up, you got to move up. It's what's best for the organization. And so I did put in, I did not get it. The list of six that came out was probably the best list I've ever seen. It is absolutely stellar. Over the next 2 years or so, there'll probably be about 10 more battalion chiefs positions come up. We're going to have a pretty big turnover from like that class of like 96 to 99 are all getting ready to retire with sick time and stuff like that. They're hitting their 27 years, which puts them at 30 years with sick time, the way our pension and stuff works out, that they won't have to do a full 30 because it hits them at that 30.
Right.
And they're actually paying to come to work. If I stayed a captain at 23 for the next 9, 10 years until I retire, I'd be okay with it. I will put in for the battalion chief processes just for those reasons we talked about, is that sometimes being in a position that you're comfortable with, you're okay with, you're stagnant. And it's time to move on. Do I know I can make changes if I stepped up to a battalion chief? Yes. There would be things I would implement that I would think would help the department. Where do I see myself? Honestly, I see myself making a cultural change in my department to where physical fitness is a higher priority than it was 10 years ago. It already is starting to get there. But like I said, I presented that wellness fitness initiative for the county, which has three pillars: fitness, mental health, cancer, cardiac prevention and screening. It's the three pillars of the that I implemented. So that's really where I see myself, is just if 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we have some kind of awesome fitness plan in place and it's being implemented and nobody remembers my name, I'm good with that. Like, as long as something happens and we're getting better. But I see myself just that. I'm vice president of our local union, 1492. I see myself just staying there and making that better. Got a Metro Atlanta Fools chapter open that was a Fools chapter here in Georgia. One of our firefighters started that in 2000. It was the Georgia Fools from 2000 to 2006. They had probably 600 members, and our firefighter Bill Craddock recognized that that was just too many members and said, hey, we need to break this up into local chapters. They got local chapters. He started Metro Atlanta Area Fools, later died in a line of duty death that year. And the chapter kind of lost some steam, but stayed up until 2013, where it folded. And now 2024, we're bringing it back. We got it back up and open. We're a nonprofit. I just see myself getting that up and running and changing the culture. Like that's really my main goal. My main goal is not to move up. I don't care about recognition. I don't care about a status, cross bugles, any of that stuff. I care about the fire service as a whole. I care about the younger kids that are, I got guys on my crew that are my son's age. Mm-hmm. Like, I want when they're 43 to them to have a better department, them to have a better fire service in general. And I just want to see passion and tradition and people caring. Like, I want to see people fired up about coming in every third day or 40, whatever your schedule is. Every time you come on shift, I want you excited about showing up to shift. I want you to have that drive to want to make the younger people below you excited. Yeah, that's where I see myself. I don't care about moving up in rank and reckoning any of that stuff. I will. I'm going to put in for it to have a broader influence and maybe people at headquarters that listen to me a little more. Who knows when I present ideas, but yeah, that's where I see myself, just working hard to try to make a cultural change in one, fitness, and two, passion. Just I want people to have that passion to want to make the fire service better, to not sit around in recliners all day. Exactly. To not use your shift day as a recovery day from your part time. Like,
thank you.
I get
thank
it.
You.
People, you know, we have lawn care services and we have pressure washing businesses and all this stuff. And people come in every third day and they're like, oh man, I'm tired from working my pressure washing job next 2 days. Let me get these invoices and use the fire department day as a day to do all my office work. And then I'm going to go rent. No, this is your full-time job. All the other stuff, you need to find some other time to do it, but
not on
my watch, man.
Thank you. Like I tell people, there's a time and a place. If you do that, at least come in, do the job, make sure you PT. We get a good thing at training. We have a little camaraderie bond time. After that, if you need to go, you know, everybody, it's always good to have a little break, alone time. Sure. You can go do that. I'm not saying it's right, but I'd rather you do that than when you come in, like you just said, it's like, oh, all right, I'm here. I got work to do, but it's not fire department related. Like, no.
7 to 4, that's fire department time. After 4 o'clock, you know, I'm okay if you want to work on those things. But 7 to 4, we're doing, this is our job.
Exactly.
Like, get the trucks checked. Do not let me see you at the table working on your part-time stuff and your truck's not checked off. Oh, boy.
That could be another rabbit hole.
We're going out of service and putting gear on and training all day. We're going to reload 5-inch at least 6 times.
I genuinely love what you said because, I mean, you back it. You back it. Like I said, I saw the clip of back of the bay getting all the, I guess, that metro area together, doing some PT, doing hard work together, suffering together. And then I heard a little bit of your speech at the end. I didn't get to hear all of it, but you're living proof. Like you practice what you preach, man. And for you, back of the bay, continue doing that, man. That's bringing us together. That's making the fire service better for generations to come. So thank you. Thank you for doing that. And also thank you for accepting this invite and coming on here, man, and talking shop. Some might not want to hear it, but in this day and age, you got to sometimes hear and swallow and think of things that you don't like. So that's what I have to say to you.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for reaching out to me, inviting me. Like you brought up Back of the Bay, those guys are awesome. Go follow them on Facebook, Instagram. They're great. Their content's good. They've got, you know, they're real big into physical fitness. There's all kinds of Instagram, Facebook guys out there. Find what you like, follow it. Me personally, I like Back of the Bay, Black Smoke Sticker Company, Engine to the Rescue, Working Fire Company. Those are all great ones. The Conduct and Becoming, Conduct Unbecoming guys, they're hilarious. Cancel the Squad's great. Black Sheep Fireman, I can go on. I like all those pages. I run a little page as well, and it's called Heavy Smoke Show, and it's just I put a workout up every third day and have a little podcast, and that's really all that one is. I don't get into the whole making memes and stuff like that, I'll share them. If I see a cool one, I'll share it, but I don't really get into the whole making memes and stuff. I just like to put up workout videos and workouts and, the little link to podcasts, which I just kind of started doing, but it's fun. I like talking to people. I like hearing their opinions. Hey, yeah. It's fun.
Awesome.
Very,
awesome.
Very fun.
And so I call it, the shameless plug. What's the name of your Instagram page? That way others can follow it.
So I have Heavy Smoke Showing, and it's on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for fitness. And I'm on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, iHeartRadio. I have a bunch of shows on the back end, but I've just been doing tons of recording and interviewing people so that I have content, because I don't want like a gap. I've put one out and I've got a lot of good feedback from that one. It's very fun. But if you want to see like fire department stuff, I have My Life at DeKalb Fire 13 or 23. That one is where I just post all my fire department stuff. That's, I try not to mix the two up, but that's like if we have working fire pictures or helmet cam stuff like that, things, calls we've been to, that's where I put all that content. So, yeah, I appreciate that.
No, man. Like I said, you're trying to spread positivity. This is what this whole platform is about. I'm not in it for notoriety. I'm not in it for sponsorship. Like I tell everybody, when I'm done in episodes, then I'm done. I've done my part, but the journey of it, meeting the people I've been able to meet, networking, it's been awesome. So what you're doing is what I'm trying to do, man. So thank you. Thank you. Like I said, thank you for accepting the invite.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I'm going to, send you a link to hop on mine at some time.
Hey,
you my questions.
Send it and I will reciprocate the favor, pal. That's what we do. What we
I
do.
Like it. Awesome.
Man, thank you. Thank you. Like I said, you enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule to do this.
No problem. Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.